All right, we are continuing Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban. And this is chapter 11. And it is Christmas morning. On Christmas morning, Harry was woken by Ron throwing his pillow at him. Oi, presents! Harry reached for his glasses and put them on, squinting through the semi-darkness at the foot of his bed, where a small heap of parcels had appeared. Ron was already ripping the paper off his own presents. Another sweater from Mum, again. See if you've got one. Harry had. Mrs. Weasley had sent him a scarlet sweater, with the Gryffindor lion knitted on the front, and also a dozen home-baked mince pies. What's mince pie?
It's like a meat pie.
Oh, okay. What kind of meat? Is it like mince, because mince meat? It's like cut up really, really finely or something?
I don't know. Why don't you look it up right now and tell
us? Okay. We are looking it up. Mince pie. Mince pie is a British festive sweet pastry traditionally consumed during the Christmas and New Year period. Mince pies have a pastry top filled with mince meat, a preserve typically containing apple, dried fruit, such as raisins or sultanas, spices, and either suet. What's suet? Let's see.
Oh,
it's beef, or it's S-U-E-T. It's beef or mutton fat. Or vegetable
fat.
Yeah. It says modern mince pies typically do not contain any meat. But because suet is raw beef or mutton fat, mince pies made with suet are not suitable for vegetarians. Really? okay, yeah, and that's all. It refers to, originally it was ground meat. Because it's minced. Interesting. Oh, apparently in Britain and Australia, they, leave a mince pie on a plate for Santa Claus. That's funny. Anyways, shall we continue? Okay. Mince pies, some Christmas cake, and a box of nut brittle. As he moved all these things aside, he saw a long, thin package lying underneath. "What's that?" said Ron, looking over, a freshly unwrapped pair of maroon socks in his hand. "Dunno," said Harry. Harry ripped the parcel open and gasped as a magnificent, gleaming broomstick rolled out onto his bedspread. I like how there's a long, thin, broomstick-shaped package. He's like, "I don't know what it is." They did the same thing with his other broomstick when he got it. He's like, "I wonder what it could be. Let me take the paper off this broomstick-like object." Ron dropped his socks and jumped off his bed for a closer look. "I don't believe it," he said hoarsely. It was a firebolt, identical to the dream broom Harry had gone to see every day in Diagon Alley. Its handle glittered as he picked it up. He could feel it vibrating and let go. It hung in midair, unsupported at exactly the right height for him to mount it. His eyes moved from the golden registration number at the top of the handle, right down to the perfectly smooth, streamlined birch twigs that made up its tail. "Who sent it to you?" said Ron in a hushed voice. "Look and see if there's a card," said Harry. Ron ripped apart the firebolt's wrappings. "Nothing. Blimey, who'd spend that much on you?" "Well," said Harry, feeling stunned, "I'm betting it wasn't the Dursleys." "Oh, but it was Dumbledore," said Ron, now walking around and around the firebolt, taking in every glorious inch. "He sent you the invisibility cloak anonymously." "That was my dad's, though," said Harry. "Dumbledore was just passing it on to me. He wouldn't spend hundreds of galleons on me. You can't go giving students stuff like this." "That's why he wouldn't say it was from him," said Ron, "in case some git like Malfoy said it was favoritism. Hey, Harry." Ron gave a great whoop of laughter. "Malfoy, wait till he sees this you on this. He'll be sick as a pig. This is an international standard broom, this is." "I can't believe it," Harry muttered, running a hand along the firebolt, while Ron sank onto Harry's bed, laughing his head off at the thought of Malfoy. Who? I know, said Ron, controlling himself. I know who it could have been. Lupin. What? Said Harry, now starting to laugh himself. Lupin? Listen, if he'd had this much gold, he'd be able to buy himself some new robes. Yeah, but he likes you, said Ron, and he was away with you when your Nimbus got smashed. He might have heard about it and decided to visit Diagon Alley and get this for you. What do you mean he was away, said Harry? He was ill when I was playing in that match. Well, he wasn't in the hospital wing, said Ron. I was there, cleaning out bedpans on that detention from Snape, remember? Harry frowned at Ron. I can't see Lupin affording something like this. What are you two laughing about? Hermione had just come in, wearing her dressing gown and carrying Crookshanks, who was looking very grumpy, with a string of tinsel tied around his neck. Boo, you would do that to your kitten if you were, like, 12, wouldn't you? Poor Crookshanks.
Actually, it would be a bow and Christmas
lights. Oh, yeah, it would, wouldn't it? Like, between the ears? Oh, you could totally do that with Crookshanks because he's so fluffy. That would look adorable and pathetic. Poor Crookshanks. Don't bring him in here, said Ron, hurriedly snatching Scabbers from the depth of his bed and stowing him in his pajama pocket. But Hermione wasn't listening. She dropped Crookshanks onto Seamus's empty bed and stared, open-mouthed, at the fireball. Oh, Harry, who sent you that? No idea, said Harry. There wasn't a card or anything with it. To his great surprise, Hermione did not appear either excited or intrigued by the news. On the contrary, her face fell, and she bit her lip. What's the matter with you? Said Ron. I don't know, said Hermione slowly. But it's a bit odd, isn't it? I mean, this is supposed to be quite a good broom, isn't it? Ron sighed exasperatedly. It's the best broom there is, Hermione, he said. So it must have been really expensive. Probably cost more than all the Slytherin's brooms put together, said Ron happily. Well, who'd sent Harry as something as expensive as that, and not even tell him they'd sent it, said Hermione. Who cares, said Ron impatiently. Listen, Harry, can I have a go on it, can I? I don't think anyone should ride that broom just yet, said Hermione shrilly. Harry and Ron looked at her. What do you think Harry's going to do with it? Sweep the floor? Said Ron. But before Hermione could answer, Crookshanks sprang from Seamus's bed, right at Ron's chest. Get him out of here! Ron bellowed as Crookshanks' claws ripped his pajamas, and Scabbard attempted a wild escape over his shoulder. Ron seized Scabbers by the tail and aimed a misjudged kick at Crookshanks, that hit the trunk of Harry's bed, knocking it over and causing Ron to hop up and down, howling with pain. Crookshanks' fur suddenly stood on end. A shrill, tiny whistling was filling the room. The pocket sneakoscope had become dislodged from Uncle Vernon's old socks and was whirling and gleaming on the floor. I forgot about that, said Harry, bending down and picking it up. I never wear those socks if I can help it. The sneakoscope whirled and whistled in his palm. Crookshanks was hissing and spitting at it. You'd better take that cat out of here, Hermione, said Ron furiously, sitting on Harry's bed, nursing his toe. Can't you shut that thing up? He added to Harry as Hermione strode out of the room. Crookshanks' yellow eyes still fixed maliciously on Ron. Harry stuffed the sneakoscope back inside the socks and threw it back on his trunk. All that could be heard now were Ron's stifled moans of pain and rage. Scabbers was huddled in Ron's hand. It had been a while since Harry had seen him out of Ron's pocket, and he was unpleasantly surprised to see that Scabbers, once so fat, was now very skinny. Patches of fur seemed to have fallen out, too. He's not looking too good, is he? Harry said. It's stress, said Ron. He'd be fine if that big, stupid furball left him alone. But Harry, remembering what the woman at the magical menagerie had said about rats living only 3 years old, couldn't help feeling that unless Scabbers had powers he had never revealed, he was reaching the end of his life. And despite Ron's frequent complaints that Scabbers was both boring and useless, he was sure that Ron would be very miserable if Scabbers died. Christmas spirit was definitely thin on the ground in the Gryffindor common room that morning. Hermione had shut Crookshanks in her dormitory, but was furious with Ron for trying to kick him. Ron was still fuming about Crookshanks' fresh attempt to eat Scabbers. Harry gave up trying to make them talk to each other and devoted himself to examining the firebolt, which he had brought down to the common room with him. For some reason, this seemed to annoy Hermione as well, but she didn't say anything. She kept looking darkly at the broom, as though it, too, had been criticizing her cat. At lunchtime, they went down to the Great Hall to find that the house tables had been moved against the walls again, and that a single table, set for 12, stood in the middle of the room. Professors Dumbledore, McGonagall, Snape, Sprout, and Flitwick were there, along with Filch, the caretaker, who had taken off his usual brown coat and was wearing a very old and rather moldy-looking tailcoat. There were only three other students, two extremely nervous-looking first years, and a sullen, faced Slytherin fifth year. "Merry Christmas," said Dumbledore. Is he Santa Claus? As Harry, Ron, and Hermione approached the table. "As there are so few of us, it seems foolish to use the house tables. Sit down, sit down." Harry, Ron, and Hermione sat down side by side at the end of the table. "Crackers," said Dumbledore enthusiastically, offering the end of a large silver noisemaker to Snape, who took it reluctantly and tugged. With a bang like a gunshot, the cracker flew apart to reveal a large pointed witch hat topped with stuffed vulture. Harry, remembering the Bogart, caught Ron's eye and they both grinned. Snape's mouth thinned, and he pushed the hat toward Dumbledore, who swapped it for his wizard's hat at once. "Dig in," he advised the table, beaming around. "You doing okay, Boo?"
Mm-hmm.
"Okay. Should I keep going, or are you getting tired?"
"No, I'm okay."
"Okay." As Harry was helping himself to roast potatoes, the doors of the Great Hall opened again. It was Professor Trelawney, gliding toward them as though on wheels. She had put on a green sequined dress in honor of the occasion, making her look more than ever like a glittering, oversized dragonfly. "Sybil, this is a pleasant surprise," said Dumbledore, standing up. "I have been crystal-gazing, headmaster," said Professor Trelawney in her mistiest, most faraway voice. "And to my astonishment, I saw myself abandoning my solitary luncheon and coming to join you. Who am I to refuse the promptings of fate? I at once hastened from my tower, and I do beg you to forgive my lateness." "Certainly, certainly," said Dumbledore, his eyes twinkling. "Let me draw you a chair." And he did indeed draw a chair in midair with his wand, which revolved for a few seconds before falling with a thud between Professors Snape and McGonagall. Professor Trelawney, however, did not sit down. Her enormous eyes had been roving around the table, and she suddenly uttered a kind of soft scream. "I dare not, headmaster. If I join the table, we shall be 13. Nothing could be more unlucky. Never forget that when 13 dine together, the first to rise will be the first to die." "We'll risk it, Sybil," said Professor McGonagall impatiently. "Do sit down, the turkey's getting stone cold." Professor Trelawney hesitated, then lowered herself into the empty chair, eyes shut and mouth clenched tight, as though expecting a thunderbolt to hit the table. Professor McGonagall poked a large spoon into the nearest tureen. "Tripe, Sybil?" "What's tripe?"
"It's a fish."
"Oh, interesting." Professor Trelawney ignored her. Eyes open again, she looked around once more and said, "But where is dear Professor Lupin?"
"Oh, by the way, tripe is also something that you can eat when, like, somebody's full of it. Like, what a load of tripe. Like, what a load of shit."
"Right, right. So, what is it? Does that have to do with the fish? I mean, is it like a crummy kind of fish?"
"Yeah, Uh-huh, yeah.
I see. Why would they be serving a crummy kind of fish? They do. English food is the worst, isn't it?
What?
English food is awful, isn't it? I'm afraid the poor fellow is ill again, said Dumbledore, indicating that everybody should start serving themselves. Most unfortunate that it should happen on Christmas Day. But surely you already knew that, Sybil, said Professor McGonagall, her eyes raised. Professor Trelawney gave Professor McGonagall a very cold look. Certainly I knew, Minerva, she said quietly. But one does not parade the fact that one is all-knowing. I frequently act as though I'm not possessed of the inner eye, so as to not make others nervous. That explains a great deal, said Professor McGonagall tartly. Professor Trelawney's voice suddenly became a good deal less misty. If you must know, Minerva, I have seen that poor Professor Lupin will not be with us for very long. He seems aware himself that his time is short. He positively fled when I offered to crystal gaze for him. Imagine that, said Professor McGonagall dryly. I doubt, said Dumbledore, in a cheerful but slightly raised voice, which put an end to Professor McGonagall and Professor Trelawney's conversation, that Professor Lupin is in any immediate danger. Severus, you've made the potion firm again. Yes, headmaster, said Snape. Good, said Dumbledore. Then he should be up and about in no time. Derek, have you had any of these chipolatas? They're excellent. The first-year boy went furiously red on being addressed directly by Dumbledore, and took the platters of sausages with trembling hands. Professor Trelawney behaved almost normally until the very end of the Christmas dinner, 2 hours later. Full to bursting with Christmas dinner, and still wearing their party hats, Harry and Ron got up from the table, and she shrieked loudly, "My dears, which of you left his seat first? Which?" "Dunno," said Ron, looking uneasily at Harry. "I doubt that it'll make much of a difference," said Professor McGonagall coldly, "unless a mad axeman is waiting outside the doors to slaughter the first into the entrance hall." Even Ron laughed at that. Professor Trelawney looked highly affronted. "Coming?" said Harry to Hermione. "No," said Hermione muttered. "I want a quick word with Professor McGonagall." "Probably trying to see if she can take any more classes," yawned Ron, as they made their way into the entrance hall, which was completely devoid of mad axemen. When they reached the portrait hall, they found Sir Cadogan enjoying a Christmas party with a couple of monks, several previous headmasters of Hogwarts, and his fat pony. He pushed up his visor and toasted them with a flagon of mead. "Merry Christmas! Password?" "Scurvy cur," said Ron. "And the same to you, sir," roared Sir Cadogan, as the painting swung forward to admit them. Harry went straight up to the dormitory, collected the firebolt and the broomstick servicing kit Hermione had given him for his birthday, brought them downstairs, and tried to find something to do to the firebolt. However, there were no bent twigs to clip, and the handle was so shiny it seemed pointless to polish it. See, Harry spends a lot of his free time polishing his broomstick. Carrie? And Carrie, are you still there? Did you hear my dirty joke? I commented that Harry spends a lot of time polishing his broomstick. Anyways, he and Ron simply sat admiring it from every angle until the portrait hole opened, and Hermione came in, accompanied by Professor McGonagall. Though Professor McGonagall was head of Gryffindor House, Harry had seen her in the common room only once. He and Ron stared at her, both holding the firebolt. Hermione walked around them, sat down, picked up the nearest book, and hid her face behind it. "So that's it then, is it?" said Professor McGonagall beadily, walking over to the fireside and staring at the firebolt. "Miss Granger has just informed me that you've been sent a broomstick, Potter." Harry and Ron looked around at Hermione. They could see her forehead reddening over the top of the book, which was upside down. "May I?" said Professor McGonagall, but she didn't wait for an answer, before pulling the firebolt out of their hands. She examined it carefully from handle to twig ends. Hmm. And there was no note at all, Potter? No card? No message of any kind? No, said Harry blankly. I see, said Professor McGonagall. Well, I'm afraid I'll have to take this, Potter. What? Said Harry, scrambling to his feet. Why? It will be neat to check for jinxes, said Professor McGonagall. Of course, I'm no expert, but I dare say Madam Hooch and Professor Flitwick will strip it down. Strip it down? Repeated Ron, as though Professor McGonagall was mad. It shouldn't take more than a few weeks, said Professor McGonagall. You'll have it back if we are sure it is jinx-free. There's nothing wrong with it, said Harry, his voice shaking slightly. Honestly, Professor. You can't know that, Potter, said Professor McGonagall, quite kindly. Not until you've flown it, at any rate, and I'm afraid that is out of the question until we are certain it has not been tampered with. I shall keep you informed. Professor McGonagall turned on her heel and carried the firebolt out of the portrait hole, which closed behind her. Harry stood staring after her, the tin of high-finished polish still clutched in his hands. Ron, however, rounded on Hermione. What did you go running to McGonagall for? Hermione threw her book aside. She was still pink in the face, but stood up and faced Ron defiantly. Because I thought, and Professor McGonagall agrees with me, that that broom was probably sent to Harry by Sirius Black. And that's the end of chapter 11. And next we'll read chapter 12, called The Patronus. You like that, my boo? My kitty, are you there? Did you fall asleep, my love? Okay. I'll let you go to sleep now. I love you so much, boo. Sleep well, kitten. Good night, boo.